Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of F This Movie, the podcast that makes a bad one good and a wrong one right. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I am joined this evening via Skype from the great state of Virginia by Mr. Alex Lawson. How are you, sir?
Terrific. Great to be back again. I'm embracing my role as sort of like dropping in and out of the podcast intermittently here. Mm-hmm. If we were Seinfeld characters, you know, mm-hmm. you would be Jerry.
Mm, okay.
And Doug would be like Kramer because he is a bigot. No, I'm kidding. No, he's not. And I would fancy myself like a David Putty type or something. I don't know.
Oh, all right. Do you want to are you going to do the podcast as Putty or what?
I'm not going to. I do have my face painted, however.
Okay, good.
Because I am a face painter.
I got to do all that business where I say
go
you can
it.
Find our website at fthismovie.blogspot.com and you can email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/fthismovie and on Twitter at twitter.com/fthismovie. You can find us in the iTunes store or at dvdverdictpresents.com. Thanks to everybody at DVD Verdict for carrying our show. Yeah, and all of our old shows are available in the iTunes store or on fthismovie.blogspot.com. We're somewhere in the 60s now, so we're just cranking these things out. But
do you have like big milestones planned for like the 75 and the 100 yet, or are we just playing this fast and loose?
Yeah, we should probably come up with something, huh?
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, and
this podcast, like in front of everybody, is probably the perfect place to try and figure out what we're going to do.
Absolutely, yeah. Definitely.
Let's brainstorm.
While we're at it, let's talk about dinner plans. Tonight we are talking about a movie from last summer called The Last Airbender, directed by M. Night Shyamalan, which, of course, would be the second appearance of M. Night Shyamalan on this podcast. The first was when you and I discussed Signs in the early days of F This Movie. Earlier days, I guess.
And earlier.
He's back, and so are we. And we're going to have lots to say about The Last Airbender and, of course, how we arrived at doing this podcast. But before we talk about any of that, Alex, have you seen anything good lately?
I've seen some good things lately.
Yeah.
We don't have to spend a ton of time on it because I went to the movie shows.
Sure, the movie shows.
The movie shows.
Yeah.
Not this past weekend, but the weekend before, which was Memorial Day weekend.
Okay.
I realize this podcast is frozen in time forever when anyone should choose to listen to it. But no, we're doing it a week after Memorial Day weekend.
Right.
I spent the actual Memorial Day, Monday, with my day off, in the movie theater alone.
Nice.
Like a good American should. And I saw two things which have been discussed in some forum on at this movie. I saw Bridesmaids, which you did a whole podcast about.
Yes.
And then I also saw Hangover, which was not explicitly discussed, but you put your review from about.com on the F This Movie site. And I think as far as Bridesmaids goes, at least, that's a wonderful show, by the way, with you and your lovely wife.
Thank you.
If you haven't listened to it yet, maybe you meant to see it before you listened to it. Maybe you've seen it by now. You should definitely go listen to it. It's very good.
We did receive one of our first sort of negative emails based on that show.
Oh, no shit. Why?
A listener was displeased with a few aspects of the show.
Oh, were you guys being like too like cutesy or something?
That was one of the complaints too. But I
not
felt
that
like,
I had that complaint. I just thought that someone might have that.
Well,
complaint.
I felt like it came across that we were sort of goofing on that whole idea,
lampooning on that. Certainly, of course, I know you guys. I don't know who this person was, but anyway, we don't have to like criticize the listeners or whatever.
No.
Anyway, I would agree with a lot of the sentiments communicated on that podcast. I thought it was very funny, and it's very refreshing to see. I mean, that's, I guess, where we're at with the state of comedy. I guess it's refreshing to see any sort of good comedy that's pretty cohesive.
Right.
But I did agree with you that there were lots of things that were working better than other things in the movie that I would have liked to have seen, you know, been expounded upon.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, good show by everybody involved. The more pressing issue, so I recommend Bridesmaids to everybody. Everyone should, you should see it. The more pressing issue is, when I saw Hangover 2, I read your review and many like it, that, you know, sort of levied a similar criticism that I've heard, just being that it's many aspects of the movie are just retreads, or, you know, just a large retread of the first movie. And while I would agree with a lot of that, I don't know if I'm feeling generous today or something. I mean, I feel compelled to sort of lobby on behalf of The Hangover Part 2, because I thought at least in the first act and the third act, before they actually get into the mess and after they do, I felt like there was a lot of acknowledgement to things that had happened before that, like, informed the characters' performances. I'm thinking specifically about it, like, when they get back. I mean, I won't spoil Hangover 2, but,
oh,
like...
Oh, God, no.
No, but I mean, like, when, you know, when it all... Not that everybody in America didn't see it. What an ungodly amount of money that movie made.
To see a movie that they've already seen.
Yeah, okay, all right. Wait. I mean, I did appreciate a lot of the stuff that went on with the Ed Helms character, like, the way he sort of stood up to the father and talked about, like, you know, I'm like, I look like a normal guy, but I have this track record of, like, doing these really perverse things. I liked that moment, and I liked that they made points to, like, be very cautious about having, you know, not having these things happen again. Like, they weren't even going to invite, you know, Zach Galifianakis' character along.
Yeah, and I think I said as much in my review, but for about the first 20 minutes, like, I was kind of on board. I liked the stuff of them being out at breakfast, and this is the bachelor party, and I liked a lot of their interactions, and I felt, like you said, that there was some acknowledgement of what happened in the first movie, and it was like, oh, we're actually going to maybe go someplace, not entirely new, because I'd seen the trailers, I knew that ultimately it's the same setup, but like that it was going to be a little bit different. And I think I said in the review too, and I don't mean to be like quoting myself, but like
no, that's fine.
One idea that is hinted at a few times in the movie, it's sort of hinted that like Bradley Cooper kind of is amused by or likes Zach Galifianakis, and I thought that was interesting. I thought, why not have them all be friends now or change the dynamic in some way so that it's not a beat-for-beat remake of the first movie? So the first 20 minutes, it seems a little bit like they're going that direction. And then as soon as they get, you know, they wake up or whatever, hung over, I mean, it is beat-for-beat the same movie. And they don't improve on the jokes. In any way, they just retell them, but change the words a little bit.
Now, see, and again, we don't have to spend a ton of time on this because I'm sure people read what you wrote.
I'm not sure. Who likes reading? Nobody reads, please.
Or not. But I actually like. I felt like the whole, like, even the middle part, which is from a storytelling perspective, very similar. I felt like the whole tone of it was a little bit like. I really felt as though the stakes were raised because I feel like after and you know, totally call me out if you think I'm like making excuses or apologizing for it, but like I feel like, I don't know, guys waking up after like a crazy night in Vegas. I don't know. I felt like I had read the criticisms before I saw it, but I don't know. I felt like a night out in Bangkok, like, had, like, this whole other, like, more perverse and, like, seedy vibe to it, more so than just, like, a night of wild partying, which I know is still what they did, and, like...
Well, and
maybe I'm reading too much into it, I don't know. But.
Well, I think you're right in theory, but I don't think the movie capitalizes on that in any way. I think you're right that, like, they're in Bangkok, they're way far away from home,
yeah.
They don't speak the language, theoretically the stakes are raised, theoretically... It is a scarier, darker, seedier place, but I don't think the movie, with the exception of a few obvious like tranny jokes,
okay, good. Yeah, that was my.
Capitalizes on any of that. I think they basically just redo the jokes from Vegas.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, yeah, maybe I'm projecting what I maybe wanted to have seen and I or something, but I don't know. I mean, I still really enjoyed myself for the hour and 40 minutes. Yeah. You know.
That's all you can ask for.
And if that's not a glowing review, I don't know what is. Anyway, we've talked about that. What have you seen?
Oh, gosh. Well, I wanted to talk about a bunch of movies because I felt like if I did, it would put off talking about The Last Airbender for longer.
Sure, throw them at me. I don't know.
So, I rewatched a couple of things on Blu-ray. I rewatched Triple X, Don't Ask Why. There's a story that goes, but it's not important.
Yeah, all right. Okay.
I did not like Triple X when I saw it. I liked it better rewatching it this time. Only
really?
Because, I mean, it is a profoundly stupid movie. It is.
I only saw it the one time too. I don't have any and that was when it came out. So
yeah, it is as stupid as a movie gets. But I enjoyed it a little more this time as sort of this honest, though cynical, that's a contradiction in terms, attempt at sort of doing James Bond for sort of a different set, you know. I mean, the movie already feels so
talk
dated.
About projecting what you want to have seen.
No, it absolutely is.
I'm kidding. Yeah, I mean
I think the movie's pretty even on the nose about that. I mean,
oh really?
He's this secret agent, and there's a Q, and there's an M, and Asia Argento is the Bond girl. Which, by the way, for no other reason, it's worth watching than because Asia Argento is in it. The movie's already dated because it's set entirely in the world of like extreme sports.
And
doesn't exist anymore. Now it would be like MMA or like Ultimate Fighting or something.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
It's really stupid, but I had a better time with it than I remembered. I also rewatched the John McTiernan remake of The Thomas Crown Affair.
Oh, okay. Again, that's one I saw when it came out,
yeah.
Not since.
And it was the same for me. I hadn't seen it. I think 99 is when that came out, so it's been over a decade. I don't know. I really liked it. I think it's a movie that does its job really well. It's sort of made for adults. It doesn't pander in the way that so many movies do. It's about, you know, people in their 40s,
sure.
but not sort of aggressively marketed to, like the way like a Nancy Meyers movie is, like, hey, older adults, come see this. It's just, this is a movie about adults, sort of for adults. I think John McTiernan does a really good job with it, and it made me wish that he would sometimes. He's great at doing action movies, but this was kind of a neat change of pace for him. My only issue with the movie, honestly, and I like Renee Russo, but I think she tries to oversell her own sort of sexiness, you know?
Well, it's funny you mention that because, as I just said, I have not seen it since I saw it the first time, which was, you know, like 99 or 2000.
Yeah.
Again, acknowledge our slight age difference. I was 15 when I saw that movie, and I knew who Renee Russo was. I had seen the Lethal Weapon movies and, you know, shit like that and all that. But, like, I remember seeing that movie and thinking, whoa, she's like, well, first of all, she has a topless scene in the movie, if my memory serves me, right?
It does.
And I had never seen her in that fashion before, and I remember being pretty struck by it. But again, I was 15, and maybe, I don't know, if I watched it again today, maybe I would share your sentiment of like, maybe she's not – do you think she's not right for it, or do you think she's just playing it incorrectly?
I think she pushes it. It's not that I think she's wrong for it.
Okay.
I just think she read this and thought like, oh, I get to be sort of vampy and sexy. And so she decided to really do that when, you know, Renee Russo, we've spoken of, I think before, like talking about Tin Cup. She's super appealing in that movie, but she kind of isn't aware of how appealing she is. And that's her charm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. She's really good in that movie.
Yeah.
For that reason. You know?
I've liked her in plenty of stuff, but not as much in The Thomas Crown Affair. Okay. Moving on. I also watched on Netflix Instant, because I'm a glutton for punishment, a movie called Rampage, which is, I think, a 2009 film directed by one Uwe Boll. Not based on a video game.
I was just going to ask. I'm like, was that where there are monsters smashing, you know, skyscrapers?
No, I would totally watch that movie. No, here's the thing, and it's fitting that actually I watched an Uwe Boll film sort of in preparation for the Last Airbender podcast, because I suspect his name will be coming up later. It's a bad movie that I didn't like, but it's certainly light years ahead of what he's done in the past. I've seen more of his movies than I can understand. Unfortunately, it's, you know, it is a, he goes out of his way to make sort of edgy or provocative movies that are really just bleak and hateful. So this is just a movie that with like 30 minutes of bad ad-libbed dialogue between like a son and his Canadian parents.
What is the thrust of Rampage again? Refresh my memory.
Well, after these 30 minutes of like, you should get a job, son. I'm going to apply to college. Oh, coffee place. You got my order wrong. 30 minutes of that. Then he puts on like a bunch of armor and picks up a bunch of machine guns and goes on a shooting spree through the streets of, I don't remember what town it's supposed to be, but it's Canada.
A rampage, maybe.
A rampage, if you will.
Yeah, okay, all right. I'm with you now. I was confused before, I'm with you now. Yeah.
Right, and just, it's not like a revenge movie where he's shooting the coffee guy who got his order wrong, although, spoiler, that guy does get it. He's just indiscriminately mowing people down in the street, and it's horrible to watch. And it's obviously Uwe Boll, you know, again, like I said, trying to be this provocateur, like, ooh, Columbine, can you handle this? And he's a dick and whatever. But, like, on a technical level, it's a better movie than he's made before. That's the best thing I can say about it, because, again, content-wise, I hated it. I think I'm supposed to hate it. There's, like, this twist ending where he's trying to make a point, but I won't give him the
don't
curse.
Give that one away, please.
Right, and I won't even do him the courtesy of suggesting that he succeeds in making that point. But after watching the movie, I went and tried to find some reviews of it, because I was like, I wonder what people thought of this movie. The reviews, for the most part, are positive. And again, no, sure. I don't know if it's just like, I've eaten 6 rancid hamburgers in a row, and this 7th
sure,
one is from White Castle, but it's not rancid. I don't know. Okay, last two.
Go for it.
I saw 13 Assassins, which is the new Takashi Miike movie, playing on demand now, if you have sort of video on demand. I actually went to the Music Box to see it, because I deliberately waited because I wanted to see it on the big screen. And it's very much sort of a reworking of The Seven Samurai, except instead of Seven Samurai, it's 13 Assassins. But
okay,
it is, you know, it's about samurai, and it's good. It's another one of these movies that spends about an hour setting things up, and in that hour, I had some problems. It's very sort of slow and talky, which is okay, but none of the characters are all that interesting. He does have some interesting things to say about Japanese society and culture at that time, and sort of the role of the samurai in that culture that I haven't necessarily seen in movies before. Mm-hmm. It was the first... I think it's the first samurai movie I've ever seen where one of the guys explicitly says, like, being a samurai is kind of a drag. Like, it sucks. It's not all it's cracked up to be. You should do something else. Usually it's all about, you know, honor and nobility and all that.
I guess if I can interject a brief question.
Sure.
I haven't seen, like, a samurai movie that wasn't made in the 1970s or before in
right.
a long time. I guess I've never really seen like a modern samurai movie.
Maybe you're not aware of Tom Cruise.
Well, you fucking beat me to it. I was just going to say, except for
samurai.
The Last Samurai.
Or Forest Whitaker as Ghost Dog.
I didn't see Ghost Dog.
Ghost Dog is actually cool. You should totally see Ghost Dog.
All right. Well, I will.
The Last
Samurai
is not
good. As far as 13 Samurai. 13 Assassins.
Yeah.
Goes, is that still like, I don't know, is that still like a motif and aesthetic that like works in a modern setting? Yeah, okay. I mean,
well, it's not, it's
a general question. I don't,
Well, it doesn't take place in a modern
setting. Oh, okay.
I'm sorry. No, it's a period movie.
Yeah.
So it spends an hour setting stuff up, and then the last hour is a battle scene between these 13 guys and I want to say about 300 soldiers. And, it's very entertaining. It's like an hour-long fight scene. So I recommend that movie. It's not one of my favorites of the year necessarily, but it is really good. And like I said, it's on demand. If you want to watch it on a TV screen, it is playing in very limited release if you can find it. The last thing I will talk about, obviously, as we spoke of before we started recording, I did see X-Men First Class.
Well, I'm glad one of us did.
Yes.
I was in dereliction of my F this movie duty. I knew I was on the podcast. This is on a Monday after the weekend, and I Did not see it. I wanted to see it. I just didn't get a chance to. But I welcome your thoughts. I have some questions just of a person who has seen it. Go ahead.
I was very excited about it. I thought the trailers were great. I like the X-Men. I was interested in seeing it set in the 60s. I like Matthew Vaughn a lot.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of Stardust, a huge fan of Kick-Ass, so he's really on a roll. The movie had everything going for it. I had problems with it. I wanted to like it a lot more than I did. And I mean, I still enjoyed it and certain aspects of it. I liked the period. I liked sort of the energy of it. It's not real glum the way that like the Bryan Singer X-Men movies tended to be. They were very sort of morose and tortured. And his movie isn't. It's kind of like fun and upbeat.
That's cool.
Yeah. And the two performances, Michael Fassbender and James McAvoy, are both great. I really enjoyed them and would have watched a whole movie just of those two. But unfortunately, you know, I went into it expecting it to be like a sort of a relaunch of X-Men. The way that Batman Begins is like it exists in a whole different world than the Burton Schumacher Batmans. And this isn't. It very much, unfortunately, falls prey to the traps of like a prequel, where it still wants to fit into sort of the Bryan Singer chronology. And you know, it has to, it's all about just getting things into the set order that we already know that they're into by the time X-Men starts. You know what I mean? Like the way that the Lucas, those first three Star Wars movies,
he spends
three movies just putting things in place where we know that they are when Star Wars starts. Unfortunately, this movie does a lot of that too, and it feels very rushed as a result. The first hour is fun because it's showing you new things and taking you places that you haven't seen before, but then the last hour is all about just getting all the pieces lined up, and that was disappointing.
That's really interesting to me, because I don't understand. Like, I know that the Bryan Singer X-Men movies were successful, and you know, people went to see them, but I don't know if people were like committed, like in the way people were committed to seeing the Star Wars prequels mesh up with Star Wars.
Right.
I don't know if there was like I don't know that there was a clamoring for like this congruity
between whatever
First Class was going to be and what we've seen here. I feel like people would have been accepting of a new, I don't know, mythos or something.
I think they would have been as accepting as they are of this movie, at least.
Sure.
Because, you know, you have, they're in a different time period. It's all different actors. There's no real stars. There's no Wolverine, which honestly is what I think drove most people to the original X-Men series.
Mm-hmm.
So I wish that they would have taken more chances, like you said, knowing that people aren't really going to mind. Since we're already doing all this stuff differently, why not go all the way and do it all differently? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I have one quick question before we begrudgingly trudge our way into the last Airbender discussion. I have two more questions.
All right.
One of which, okay.
I'll give really long answers.
Yeah, sure. I haven't seen it. I'm asking you who has seen it. I've also been really intrigued by what I've seen in the marketing, you know, of the movie. And, you know, for as much as that, I don't know, when you walk into a movie, you should just watch it for what it is. But to some extent, you carry with it what you've seen. And that just happens. It's just a reality of the environment or whatever. I was really intrigued by everything. And then these TV spots started showing up where it had this weird, and this is probably just like a trailer cutting issue, but like, there's like a Reservoir Dogs, Mr. Blonde-esque shot of Charles Xavier holding a gun.
Yes, that is in the movie, but
and again, this is all out of context.
Exactly.
That one image, and again, maybe you're going to tell me it's totally okay. That one image really bothered me a lot.
Well, and that's the shame on the marketing people, because that is very, very deceptive.
All right.
In the context of the movie, you would not blink at that shot.
Well, good. I feel like Matthew Vaughn is a smart enough guy not to, like, obviously that, and again, it's from a marketing standpoint, it plays like a just an on the nose action beat of we're just having people pointing guns at each other. But
no,
anyway,
that is very. I haven't seen those spots, but that is that is very deceptive. That smacks of like, ooh, a guy with a gun, stick that in, you know, because that has nothing to do with that scene.
Well, that makes me feel better. Second thing, and this is something that I'll raise in the context of the last act of The Last Airbender.
That movie has acts?
Yeah. I would ask from you a brief assessment of the value of the special effects in X-Men First Class.
Not great.
Because, okay, well, there you go. That's very brief. Because I feel like, and again, from what I've seen, they don't look that great, and it looks to me like they, and you can say yay or nay or decline to answer, it looks like they may have blown their whole special effects wad budget on the shot where, I don't feel like I'm spoiling anything because it's been in every trailer, but where Magneto turns back the missiles.
Right. There are some effects that are fine and are cool and whatever, but there are a number that call attention to themselves as being subpar, especially given what we're used to now. And I think that just speaks to the fact that the movie was very rushed. You know, it was like,
I agree. I feel like I just heard about this thing being
because
made
it just
that
came up
ago.
It was like 12 months ago.
Yeah. And now it's just out. Yeah.
Matthew Vaughn said, I'm doing X-Men First Class. And that's fascinating because, you know, he had quit X-Men The Last Stand sort of at the last minute because there was pressure from Fox because of this rushed.
Oh, that is funny then, yeah.
This rushed schedule, and they were asking him to sort of make changes that he wasn't comfortable making. So he quit, and Brett Ratner steps in, and everybody hates him. And then he goes and does this in this crazy rushed time frame where it's like 12 months from the time that he and Jane Goldman start writing the script until it's in theaters.
In theaters, yeah.
The first – when was the last time you went back and watched the first Bryan Singer X-Men?
Oh, it's been a while.
That movie has shockingly bad special effects.
Oh, yeah. Well, that much I remember even when I saw it.
Yeah,
I thought,
even for the time.
Yeah.
And these aren't, I don't think, are that bad, but there are certainly some shots that don't work at all. The January Jones sort of diamond effect never works. January Jones, by the way, what a fascinating, fascinating human being. At no point does she sort of attempt to give something you would call a performance. She is Betty Draper through and through, and luckily, every outfit she is wearing obviously has been custom made to sort of show off her assets. And
otherwise, that, you barely even know she was around.
At least that, I hate saying it because it makes me sound just like a shallow, horrible human being.
Nah,
like,
it's a comic book movie.
That distracted me enough from her wooden line readings that I just was like, whatever.
Well, she can stay.
Yeah, right. But my goodness. That is I guess it's right for the, you know, the reviews.
This movie brought to you by misogyny. Thank you.
the reviews that I read all are giving her a pass because they're like, no, she's right for the role. She's this ice queen, and then she's being
icy. I was just going to raise that with you.
No,
but
you are projecting something that is not there because she does not give a performance. Let's talk about The Last Airbender, not because we want to, but because we have to.
Well, talk about why we have to.
Here at F This Movie, we welcome suggestions from listeners and fans of the show. We're always looking for new ideas because we're not always able to come up with stuff.
You should see our email exchanges.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Really pretty funny.
Until something
the ideas are few and far between.
Right. Yeah. And every once in a while, something sort of strikes us and we'll be like, oh, that could be interesting. I think I have an angle on that or whatever. But we're always welcoming stuff. And we've been very fortunate because through our emails and particularly through our Facebook page of late, there's been sort of a community that's been springing up, and there are people who regularly contribute to the discussion. Cameron and Adam and Dawn and
sure.
And Luis, and there are listeners listeners who chime in, and that's great. And we welcome that and we encourage more of it.
Definitely.
One listener who's always been great and participates a lot and always has great things to say is John Petrilla. Hi, John. recently posted on Facebook. I'm going to read a little bit from his posting.
You go for it.
You can go read it yourselves if you like at facebook.com/fthismovie.
Way to sneak that in there. It's very
thank
good.
Thank you. Thank you. I had written an article about the 1998 remake of Godzilla and how sucky it was. And apparently that reminded John Petrilla of other sucky movies, because he threw out another slightly related news. I'd ask you guys to F Shyamalan's The Last Airbender, just because it fills me with pure outrage and seething vindictive bile at seeing such incredible source material ruined so utterly. My soul yearns for it to be mocked into oblivion by people I know are up for the job. But of course, that would necessitate you actually watching the worst film in the known universe. And I wouldn't want to put you guys through that, because I have a soul, unlike Shyamalan. There was a little bit more of a discussion between the two of us, because I said to John, I would be willing to do that, because I remember when the movie came out and there was a lot of hatred thrown its way.
We should say this for watching for this show, this is the first time either of us ever saw it.
Yes, that's right.
Obviously. Yeah,
that's right.
Continue though. Yeah.
But I said, I don't know if I could do a great job because I have never watched the series upon which the movie is based.
Mm-hmm.
Avatar: The Last Airbender, which aired on Nickelodeon, I think.
Yeah.
I know it has a huge fan base. I know people swear by it and say it's great, great, great stuff. I've just never seen it. He said, no, you should still see the movie. And it sort of apologized in advance. And I appreciate that, John, because what we have done for you, you can never repay. You can never repay, John. We love you and we always appreciate your contributions. But this was work. This was rough.
Boy, that, you know what? You have hit upon a good word. We could have gone a lot of ways in terms of, like, I mean, I think it's fair to say we both didn't like the movie. We could have gone a lot of ways saying bad things about it, but you have started off using the phrase, it was work. And that is how I feel too. The movie isn't that long. It's like an hour and 40 minutes long. When I was watching it, I mean, it felt so laborious.
I had I think about the 30 minute mark, I looked over at the little counter on the
Blu-ray. Yeah, 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 me too.
And it read 30 minutes and I almost wanted to cry. I was like,
I know.
There's over an hour left. This thing has been on for 2 hours. How can there still be another hour?
I was watching it on the internet, and so, like, you know, like, internet players display the entire running time beneath the film, so right. I knew how long it was, and so I tried to not move the mouse to display the clock, and so I had a similar thing, and then I finally gave in and just, you know, moved the mouse and looked down, and it was just about at the 30-minute mark, too, so that's interesting that you say it. It was like, yeah,
I
it's
mean,
bad.
I found myself having to, like, get up and walk around, and I mean, I was still trying to pay attention and do the movie justice, if that can be said, but at the same time, I could not sit still and watch that movie. And the thing is, the whole time I'm sitting there saying, what am I going to say about this movie? I literally have no idea where to start, because the Facebook message that I just read from John sounds a lot like hyperbole. It sounds like a guy who was very much a fan of the series, which he talks about, whose heart was broken by having it ruined on screen by M. Night Shyamalan.
Mm-hmm.
And I read that and I was like, well, this is hyperbolic. And I, after watching the movie, I really would consider it one of the worst movies I've ever seen. And you know, a part of that is because you have to put, you know, bad movies in different categories, because
yeah,
I could
right
go get that. Some straight to DVD thing and watch it. And it had a budget of, you know, $20,000. And of course it's going to be just a nightmare. But here's a movie from a one-time A-list director.
Yeah, that's important to figure into, like, when you're assessing this.
Based on beloved source material with a huge budget and all of the resources of Paramount at its disposal, that received a summer release date that made a boatload of money. This movie.
Oh, did it?
The movie was successful. Which,
no shit. I didn't do much show prep, FYI. But I mean,
no amount of bad reviews apparently could people deter away. And I understand, you know, people were fans of the show, and so they wanted to see it for themselves. I remember the night that it came out, My wife was on Facebook, and there were a bunch of postings that said, like, going to the midnight show of the real Avatar. Like, take that, James Cameron.
Oh, wow.
I mean, it's funny just in general that, like, they couldn't call the movie based on the show Avatar. Well,
yeah,
because,
I have a little something to say about that, too.
The problems start right there.
Yeah, that is part of it. And that's not really its fault, I don't think.
No, but I just think it smacks of, like, yes. Everything about the movie is wrong, including the title.
That was the I mean, that should have been a sign, you know, that you know, it maybe wasn't in the cards for this particular project.
Right.
Wait,
I'm sorry, real quick. The movie cost $150 million to make. $150 million to make.
No, where did the money go?
Acting lessons for the cast. It grossed worldwide. Do you have a guess?
Worldwide. Well, since you told me it made money, did it make 200 million?
320.
I almost said 300 million, which
over
still would have been too
low. Its budget.
Oh, that's so fucked up. Wow.
So theoretically, we could get another one of these.
Yeah, well, and we'll get to that too, because the end of it, I mean, I don't know. But
real quick, we're going to be spoiling The Last Airbender. And before you say, like, no, guys, don't, fuck you, because no one see this movie. We're not spoiling it because we assume you've seen it. We're spoiling
it. This is an exception to the spoiler.
So that you never, ever have to see it, ever. Not as a curiosity, not in the way that, like, I told people to see The Happening, which was Shyamalan's last movie. I was like, no, you should see it. It's horrible, but in a fascinating, hilarious way.
Yeah, no, there's
nothing entertaining about The Last Airbender's badness.
It's interesting when you're talking about no amount of negative reviews could deter the audiences, apparently. And I will, you know, and I just did the little bit of show prep I did was just to look at the, and this is what I do every show. I go and I at least peruse its Rotten Tomatoes page. And you can say what you want about Rotten Tomatoes or Metacritic, but the bottom line is this has a 6% fresh rating on Rotten Tomatoes,
which, by the way, too high.
But listen to this though, like the way Rotten Tomatoes breaks it down, the critics, you know. The fresh rating is 6%. And yeah, that probably is too high. I don't know who those people are, but this is actually a case of those when even you read the positive reviews, Rotten Tomatoes has been very liberal with how it denotes a positive review. Anyway, the audience rating, 42%. I mean, that's a big... And I realize that, like, to some extent, there are certain sects of the movie-going audience that don't care what critics say. And that's fine. I'm not going to, you know, I mean, some critics are total pretentious douches and some of them don't know what they're talking about, but some of them do. Yeah, Patrick just pointed to himself, by the way, ladies and gentlemen.
As a pretentious douche.
Yeah.
I agree.
But I mean, that says a lot to me.
I have no problem with people not paying attention to critics. And it's love the show Avatar The Last Airbender and I'm going to go see the movie. That is fine. But to then like it, because I can't imagine that anything that existed in the and again, I did myself a disservice. I have not watched the show, so I apologize that I can't speak about that with more authority.
I've watched it actually a little bit. Okay. I mean, I can't speak with it with much authority either. I at least have seen it. I'm not a person who got way into it. I'm not really into anime or stuff like that. But I mean, I have seen it a couple of times, and it is like. It is a very interesting story to tell through that medium. Like,
I just there's no possible way that the things about the show that people loved exist in the movie.
Yeah, no, I mean that, and that's a.
There's no possible way.
Yeah, I mean, and I guess that leaves me at a little bit of a loss in terms of at least what appears to be some noticeable fan support of the movie. But I don't know. I mean. Okay, should we even like try to break this down like beat by beat? I mean, it starts out very poorly because you get scrolling text for like exposition's sake, which isn't bad in and of itself. Star Wars, come on. But the little girl reads it out loud to you.
Right. Every bit... I mean, I don't know where to start, honestly, because...
Well, that's why I started at the beginning, because I was checked out from the first frame. Because I saw some text rolling in front of me, and I'm like, okay, well, whatever. And then I heard a voice start reading the text that I was seeing. I thought I had like, right. I thought I had acquired, I don't mean to offend anybody. I thought I had acquired like some sort of like a version that a blind person would watch or something. I really did.
Yeah.
Because the text is very plain.
Why are they reading me something that I can clearly read?
So fucking weird.
There's not a moment in the movie, there's not a scene nor a line of dialogue that does not exist as exposition, as a character explaining some piece of a legend, some prophecy, some piece of the fire... Fucking, what are they fucking called?
The spirits, the fire, the no, spirits? Oh, no, the benders. So,
but the fire lords? The fire...
Oh.
Is it fire lords?
I think they're just the fire benders, aren't they?
No. They're called something else.
Well, whatever.
Already we're failing. I'm going to say fire lords.
Yeah, sure.
There's not a scene, you know, even in the bad Star Wars movies, even in like the prequels, you get scenes where characters will talk about something other than exactly what's happening at that moment. And, you know, maybe it's a terrible scene, like Anakin Skywalker saying, like, I don't like sand. It's rough and coarse. Not like you. You're pretty. That's a horrible scene.
I think you just like doing that impression. That's like the third time you've done that on the podcast.
Listen, but okay. it applies here.
I know.
That is a horrible scene, right?
Yeah,
but at least there's an attempt in there to show character through conversation other than just like, these guys killed my mom and I'm going to become Darth Vader. You know what I mean? Like every line of dialogue in The Last Airbender exists. It's like M. Night Shyamalan sat down and watched the show and took notes about like, okay, that's got to be in there and that's got to be in there and that's got to be in there. And then... failed to write a screenplay, it reads like a series of notes taken while someone watched the show.
Yeah. I mean, to say that I think we're being generous to say that the movie was even written. I think we're being liberal with the verb write.
No, it absolutely was. With one of the worst ears for dialogue.
Yeah, sure.
Ever in a movie. I should have sat down and rewatched the entire movie and just written down all of my favorite lines because they were so bad. Again, you can't. It's so bad. And then every time you stop and think, oh, this was the guy who made The Sixth Sense and Unbreakable and Signs, and people don't like Signs, but we are on record as being fans of Signs, you in particular.
Yeah,
so
I really
here
love
was
Signs.
A guy who demonstrated a good deal of talent and who was like, the most promising director of sort of the late 90s and early 2000s.
Yeah.
Who's writing dialogue that Ed Wood would be embarrassed to write. I swear to God, the only one that stands out in my head could come directly out of an Ed Wood movie. And that is the girl, the weird elf girl with the white hair at the end before she transfers her spirit into a fish, says it's time to show the Fire Lords that we believe in our beliefs as much as they believe in theirs. That's a line of dialogue from a movie that cost $150 million. How is that not... That is straight out of an Ed Wood movie.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, let me backtrack for a second because you already started... I thought we were going to save this for later, but there's no real sense in playing it coy here. You already sort of hinted at like where this... how this sort of shoehorns its way into the whole M. Night Shyamalan thing. And I will say, and I feel almost embarrassed for saying this now with the benefit of total hindsight, but this was a movie that I actually thought might work within his – because well, let me back up even more. Obviously, you already referenced The Happening, and The Happening is really bad. And I mean, I'm not a drug addict or an alcoholic, but I know that they go through certain ups and downs before they you know can cure themselves, and one of the points that they hit is referred to as rock bottom. And if we're talking about M. Night Shyamalan's career as a filmmaker, I certainly thought The Happening was it.
Because it was a progression. It wasn't a movie that came out of nowhere. It was a progression of like, this guy has lost his way. He's getting worse and worse. with every movie. And yes, absolutely. When The Happening came out, it was like, this guy has hit rock bottom. He has forgotten how to make movies. And like you, when it was announced, okay, he's going to do this movie from source material that he did not write.
That was my first thought too. And you've already hinted at it. Like I thought, okay, this is okay. And again, I was vaguely familiar with Avatar, The Last Airbender, the, you know, cartoon. And again, not being a huge fan, but I'm like, you know what? Maybe that's okay. Maybe he needs to step back from something that's not entirely his, even though I heard he was writing it. And I'm like, maybe that's not a great idea, but whatever. At least it's an adaptation.
Right.
He built on something.
Right.
Then I even saw the trailer. Did you see the trailer? It's not bad.
I don't remember it.
You should, and everyone listening too, give it, like, it's on YouTube, I'm sure. Like, I mean, just like look for the Last Airbender trailer. It's not bad. It's just like the kid. Except the cool thing is that you can't tell it's a kid. He's just like this figure in a robe with a hood, and he's doing all the airbendy tricks.
Which is how the movie opens, and right away I was like, oh, fuck.
Well, right, you're right, you're right. But like, and it's like a darkened sort of arena surrounded by candles, and he's sort of like extinguishing the candles with his, and it just sort of looks vaguely cool, and then he lifts up his hood, and he's got like the glowing eyes and the glowing tattoo, and it's a little kid, and you're like, whoa. It was visually interesting and intriguing to me. So I was actually excited.
Because so just so I understand.
Yeah, go ahead.
There's no footage from the movie in the trailer, right?
No.
Well, there you go.
And that is with hindsight, that's the key.
Right.
There's no footage at all. It's like it's like something that's meant as an introductory piece.
Right. A teaser, if you will.
Yeah, sure. But I mean, it was all downhill from there. And again, getting back to the point of, I mean, I had thought he had hit rock bottom, and this certainly must be it, right? I mean, I don't know what the hell he's doing next.
I don't either. But yeah, this seemed like a step in the right direction. This was an acknowledgement that like, okay, I've lost my way a little bit. Yeah. I'm going to adapt this other material. And I had forgotten that he had written it, honestly, until I was watching the movie. And then I was like, oh, no, he did the screenplay for this, right? Yep. Which I can't believe, and I thought this when The Happening ended too, that like the movie ends and the first credit is written, produced, and directed by M. Night Shyamalan. That takes balls.
It really does.
To stamp your name on something that's that horrible.
Immediately after.
Right.
I mean, the first thing you see.
Oh, yeah. By the way, that horrible thing, I did that. Like, whoa, way to go, M. Night.
Don't give the exec producer credit or nothing. Yeah.
I don't think I want to spend any time talking about what became referred to as the race bending controversy, which was that the characters on the series, correct me if I'm wrong, are all of sort of vaguely Asian descent.
Yeah.
And instead of doing that, M. Night cast almost entirely white kids to play at least the leads.
Yeah, the leads.
There are some Indian actors in the film and some Asian actors, and I understand people being upset about that, whether they're fans of the series who are upset. I mean, look at, comic book people freak out when, like, a hair color is changed. So if you're a fan of the series, of course you want it to be faithful, but also, you know, if you're an Asian kid or an Indian kid, it's like, look, here's a representation of me on screen in this great, cool thing that I love, and then to have some guy come along and be like, no, make him white. I assume just to what? Appeal to...
I think it's to
white
be more
moviegoers.
I mean, I think that's what it is. I hate to, if I could speculate. I mean, I would think so.
That says some horrible, horrible things about the state of our pop culture. But I think most of that discussion has already taken place when the movie came out. And I think, unfortunately, while I object to that on sort of a moral level, that is one of the last things that is wrong with this movie.
Oh, absolutely. I actually thought that too, and then, like, in reading about it, like, I mean, I didn't know that that was a controversy of the movie. It struck me as a viewer. I'm like, well, this is Asian source material, and all these, you know, the main kids are, you know, white. And that occurred to me just independently, and then I read and saw that it was something that people had raised. But yeah, again, like, not, I mean, yeah, it is the least of the problems.
It's not that he cast white actors, it's that he cast the worst white actors he could find.
And again,
shame on us because we're beating up on kids, but like...
I think that's okay, though. I thought about that before I came on here, and I'm like, it's fine. They were compensated. They're there to work. I assume he abided by the child labor laws. I'm sure they were treated very well. Forget it.
Staggeringly bad child
it's,
actors.
I mean, it's bad.
Movie.
I mean, there are good. I mean, and again, and I go back to a point that I made in the Signs podcast. He is a guy that, in my mind, has proven to work really well with child actors. And I don't understand, at the very least, this movie should have, and the script is bad, so, you know, whatever. But, like, I mean, how did he miss, how did he whiff on all these kids? There's not a talented one among them. I mean, at least not in this. As I understand it, the kid who is playing Aang, the avatar, is in, God damn it. I'll look right now. He's in a high profile project coming up. But,
oh, good, because saw him in Airbender and was like, oh, get that kid.
Anyway, to my point, I mean, say what you want about M. Night Shyamalan, and people have said a lot of things, but he at least has always, and, you know, directing kids, and I'll give him some credit. Directing kids is not easy. Like getting good performances out of kids is not easy. Even really talented kids, they are still kids. They lose focus, and you need to keep them on point and all that. I've never directed a film with a kid, but, like, he has always shown a talent for that, it's nowhere to be found.
And the kids in the films that he's directed had considerably more challenging roles, perhaps less physical, but Haley Joel Osment, who was nominated for an Oscar for The Sixth Sense, had to emote, and the kids in Signs had to emote.
No one
in Last Airbender has to emote. I mean, I understand it's hard to direct kids, but ultimately you just say, hey, kids, pretend to fight, and, like, oh, great job. Although even in the fight scenes,
I was just about to say the fight scenes are.
There's one shot that was fascinating. It's this very long take, and again, I think it's always funny to me when a filmmaker is a complete hack, and you see, like, that they're so proud of some choice that they've made. There's this long fight scene where Aang fights all these people off, and it's this long continuous shot that just sort of circles around as he fights everyone.
Is it the one that's, like, reminiscent of 300? It's like a slow-mo thing? Is that what you're talking about?
I think so. It holds for, like, a really long time, and
there's a couple sequences like
that. This one's more, I think, in the middle. He's very visible at the center of the action. Unfortunately, it's not him. It's very clearly not this child actor. And I was shocked. Again, it's just a testament to the movie's incompetence that, like, no one said, let's try and shoot around the fact that it's a stunt double. I mean, they make no bones about the fact that, like, this is not him. It's just incompetent filmmaking on every single level. Every level of this movie. Does not work. Even a terrible movie like Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, which I used to say, oh my gosh, that is just the blockbuster gone awry. And it still is. That's a bad movie.
Yeah.
But
it's not like this. I mean,
the shots look great, you know? The effects are impressive. It's a failure of storytelling, but it's...
Yeah.
But you can't compare it to something like The Last Airbender.
I'm going to put it this way. When I watched Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, I'm at least entirely clear on where the money went.
Right, right.
I don't know where $150 million got spent in this movie. I have no idea. I have no earthly idea. By the way, the kid's name is Noah Ringer. He's a ringer for a good actor.
Oh, no, look at you, Jay Leno.
No, he's going to be in, he's playing Emmett in Cowboys and Aliens this summer.
Oh, well.
So, I mean, I don't know. That seems like it might be good, but I mean, you know, whatever. Anyway, that sort of derailed us. There's just not a whole lot going on that makes me think, like, a whole lot of thought, or, like, I echo your sentiments from before, is that the whole thing, not even from a dialogue standpoint, but from if you were to look at it on a storyboard standpoint, does play like a guy who was just sort of taking notes and knew that certain things had to be in there, but like extended no further.
Right.
You can almost
see his process as you watch the movie, but it's not a good process because he did not. Obviously, I think the source material is sort of geared towards kids. because kids are the protagonists. It's a cartoon. It's on Nickelodeon. But I also know that it appeals to a lot of adults. There are a lot of adults who love this show. And so I think it's okay to have the movie obviously geared towards kids, because he obviously, that's what he had in mind when he made the movie. That's the only thing I can say. Like, oh, he made a conscious choice that to make a movie for 10-year-olds. But at no point did he attempt to expand beyond that and have a movie that might also hold some appeal or interest older viewers.
Oh yeah, there's none of that going on.
There's not even like a, there's no through line even. There's no like sort of story arc. It's not like a hero's journey. Even the, you know, the oldest, most basic story this movie fails to be. It's just this connection of things that he picked up from watching the show, that there's the Fire Nation, not the Fire Lords, it's the Fire there Nation. That there's a Fire Nation and there's spirits, and none of the stuff with the spirits ever made any sense to me. And at a certain point,
I'm at a loss.
It all just became white noise, and it just is washing over me. But like, there's everybody has spirits, and but that's the not the same as being benders, and it's not the same.
The spirits are where the benders get the power, I think.
But not everybody's a bender, and some girls have white hair and have to transfer their spirit back into a fish, and then she has to tell a whole story about, well, I got my powers from a spirit. But like, how about show some of that? Like, even a flashback, while that's the hackiest thing a director can do, like, dramatize at least a little bit of it visually instead of just having characters constantly telling each other backstory. There's a scene, and this has nothing to do with what I'm saying, but like, there's a scene.
That's all right. This movie will bring that out of you.
There's a scene in the movie where like they've been hanging out with Aang for a long time, and he wants to go see his family, and he's running around, or his people, and they're all dead, and where did they go? And like, none of that makes any sense. He's talking about, I have to go back, but we don't know where go back to where. We don't know what you're referring to. In the voiceover, in the narration, the girl says, you know, she refers to him by his name, Aang. And then 5 minutes later, on screen, asks him his name, which it doesn't. We understand that she has learned his name, and the way that she asks, again, it's like written by someone with a very loose grasp on the English language. I mean, the dialogue exchange is something like, "Is it okay if I ask you your name?" You know what I mean?
Are you taking pot shots at M. Night Shyamalan because he's Indian? Is that what this is?
I swear I'm not. I mean, it reads like a Japanese movie from the 60s that's been dubbed, you know? Is it okay if I ask you your name? And his response is something equally awkward and wordy. And it's like, she can't just say, what's your name? My name is Aang. Like, that's not good dialogue, but it makes sense to my ears.
It's at least efficient or something.
Right.
Yeah. Goddamn. I'm going to take a left turn here and take a moment and say one. I'm going to say two nice things about The Last Airbender.
Nope. I won't hear it.
Okay. There was a moment in, and again, this doesn't speak very highly of what I took away from the movie because I can't recall any specifics of any plot action going on at the time. But there was a moment. God damn. Like, I mean, I'm reaching to find okay things to say about it. Like, there's at least a movie-making nod to something that I had seen before that was at least construed to the universe of that, you know, that the movie is set in. Just wait.
It's like I'm watching The Last Airbender.
Yeah, you're watching me trying to put this
Nothing
together.
Nothing you're saying makes any sense.
I don't know.
Sense.
It's when they're in that – it's near the end when they're in All that right. cave.
Okay.
And, you know, Aang is about to get, I don't know, killed or whatever by one of the Fire Nation guys. And then he's suddenly pelted by an orb of water, and it's within the context that he's around a bunch of waterbenders, and then there is the cut to the girl who is the waterbender, who was just who had herself trying to be master, trying to master her powers or whatever, and that is at least I chuckled at it only because it is at the very least a nod, a parody or something of what you've seen in a dozen action and Western movies where the hero is about to be killed, a shot rings out, and it is someone off screen. You know, you've seen that in a million movies and and TV shows and stuff. And it,
I think,
do you understand what I'm saying?
Or, I understand. I 100% understand what you're saying. I think you're giving The Last Airbender way too much credit, because at no point do I think M. Night Shyamalan said, "Oh, this will be a neat, you know, sort of riff on that old Western trope where, you know, this happens." I think it was
Yeah, I mean, it played that way to me. Okay, my second thing is at least just that I saw, and this gets back to what I was saying about X-Men First Class and the upfronts, when, okay, it became very clear to me when I was...
I like that you just threw out upfronts. We haven't used that in so long. No, well, just, you threw it out so casually, like it's a thing that we do. You know,
there'll always be upfronts to me. There'll always be upfronts to me. I know you toyed with the idea of calling it foreplay, which I don't, which I'm not. I'm not on board with at all. No. I'll continue.
I've never called it anything, by the way.
No, that's not true. You've called it the upfronts.
No, as a joke, like, but I've officially been like, all right, let's do this section of the show. We're digressing.
In the upfronts.
Yes.
I mentioned
How
I thought, like, at least from all the effects in Last Airbender are awful.
Yeah.
But I mean, it became clear to me, at least from the construct of the story that The Last Airbender is trying to tell, that, like, in my head, I thought, okay, this is clearly building to a point where Aang is going to put this all together and, like, display some incredible there's going to be one triumphant display of power. And I don't know what that's going to be, but I'm going to keep watching and see what that is. I did. And I guess the credit that I'm giving the movie is that I was actually correct, at least from a storytelling perspective, that actually did happen. Now, that's a bad and, you know, again, I'll spoil it. Like, okay, all the Fire Nation ships are at the wall of the city, and they're on the water, and there's this big retaining wall. By the way, aside, totally, that whole last set piece is a big ripoff of the Helm's Deep sequence from Two Towers, I thought. I don't know. Like, that's what it looked like.
Yeah, I would agree.
That's what it looked like to me. I don't know.
It very well could have come directly out of the series, so yep. I don't know. But the way he staged it, certainly. But I think in his mind, and we'll get to this after you make your point, I think obviously he has sort of a trilogy in mind. But go ahead.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, for as troublesome as that shot is, Aang is learning to bend water. I'm not even going to talk about we haven't even really talked about what the bending is, but whatever. He can manipulate the water.
Right.
And he had been learning how to do it. He had shown great potential to do it. And then he essentially creates this massive tidal wave that casts over all these ships. I don't know if it's just not, and again, this might be staying true to the canon of the source material, which I'm not extensively familiar with, but then he doesn't vanquish them. He draws the wave over them as a display of power and then takes it back. And again, there was a compliment buried somewhere in here. And what I'm trying to say is that I at least respected that is where the story needs to go, at least
you understand that you're giving the movie credit for the most basic
storytelling.
I mean, a fifth grader would know that, like, if in the beginning he's trying to learn to bend water, at the end he has to be able to bend water.
I know, but I mean, that's the curve that I'm sort of grading on.
I guess this
is a shitty fucking movie, and I don't want anyone to watch it. But I'm trying to at least couch the discussion in the fact.
In that same spirit, I was impressed that all of the dialogue synced up with the movements of the actors' mouths. All
right, you fucking smartass. No, yeah, you're right.
Because I don't understand. Really, you're right. He's trying to learn to bend water, and then at the end, he does. But like. in terms of an arc, I don't understand what any of the characters even want. I know that, like, Dev Patel's character, which is bad and badly played by Dev Patel.
Was this his first project after Slumdog Millionaire? I'm not sure if it was. I think it was.
Your movie wins Best Picture, and then your follow-up is Avatar The Last Airbender. This is Halle Berry following up, whatchamacallit, with Catwoman.
And I'm no great, like, fan of Slumdog Millionaire or whatever. No, but I mean, either. This, like, what the hell?
Listen, I understand. You know, this is a huge property.
Yeah,
a chance to be in something that, you know, he thought was going to be great. He's bad.
Again,
this is coming
from the guy, me, who said this was a good idea in theory, so I guess I can't bag on him for saying, I'll do this. But
He's really bad in it, but at least I sort of understood his character's, like, arc and what he wanted. It was like, I want to get back in the good graces of my father. I can't do that until I find the Avatar. He sort of had a thing. The ways that he went about doing that didn't always make sense, but, like, I understood what his character was doing throughout the movie. The rest of the characters, I was just marking time and spouting nonsense to one another. The movie ends where he makes a big tidal wave and everybody says, "You'll be our avatar," and they bow to him and the movie fucking ends. But it doesn't end. And then we'll get to that in one second. The movie opens with book one, water. And it's not until about halfway through the movie, you know, they talk about how he can bend all of the elements, and I just keep waiting. Like, when is he gonna? Pretty soon, he has to learn how to do at least one, right? Because by the end, he's got to be able to do all four. Wrong. This entire movie is only about him learning to bend water.
Yeah, I mean it. Yeah, that became clear to me again at about that same 30-minute mark.
The moment where your heart dies.
I remember the title card being, you know, book one, whatever, water. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. This whole thing is about water.
Exactly. Because the original series, I think, was broken up into three seasons or, like, books. And I assume in each book he learns to bend a new element. Which, by the way, again, maybe the series is great. But to me, that doesn't – there's not a ton of drama there. Like, if they were to make a sequel to The Last Airbender – I don't know what they would call it because, you know, all he becomes is the waterbender in this movie. But let's say in the sequel, he's learning to bend fire. Dramatically speaking,
I think he has to bend earth next, Patrick.
Earth, I'm so sorry.
Then,
I missed
and then fire.
Some of the nuances.
The fire or the bad guy. Well, yeah, go ahead.
So we go into it knowing he has to learn to bend earth. We wait 90 minutes, and then at the end, he bends earth. But we're still not done. You know what I mean? So dramatically, that doesn't work. And M. Night Shyamalan has never even attempted to figure out a way to make any of this dramatically compelling. So I realized at the end, like, oh my gosh, there's going to be more of these, you know, in theory. I don't know that there will be. Again, the movie was successful, so there may be. I would be surprised if M. Night Shyamalan had anything to do with it.
Yeah.
Because everybody did sort of point to him as being what was wrong with the movie, I guess, as the writer-director, rightfully so.
Yes.
Because then the movie ends with sort of this cliffhanger,
it is a callback to the Shyamalan twist. It's not a twist per se, but it is a – but I mean it is a way to end the movie and go, theory.
Oh, now there's another one where the sister is the villain because it's Cliff Curtis as the head of the Fire Nation or whatever. He's like, now you have to get the Avatar. And we cut
this
to the sister.
This character we've never seen
one,
before.
I think there was one
this?
Shot of her. I think there was
shot of her. Oh, okay. Well, fuck if I know. I mean, I...
But how is that, like a twist or reveal where we're like, oh my gosh, now the
And it's
sister.
Very much, yeah, I mean...
Wow.
I mean,
But again, everything about it is handled incompetently.
The end of it is very much, and it's... We're not being too harsh. Like, it's very much shot in a way that character
gets a reveal, right?
Gets a reveal, yes.
Right.
And it was to the okay. Well, you just told me that you thought you saw her earlier in the movie. As far like when I was watching it, and again, I was sort of in and out. It didn't hold my attention. Okay,
what?
But like, yeah, right. But I was at the point where I was like, I mean, I'm using context, and I know that that's
right.
Probably his daughter, but I'm like, I don't know who that person is. I don't.
It was the girl from Craft Services. They turn the camera and they're like, "You're in the shot." No, use it.
Fuck.
Use it. It's part of my process.
Change her career.
Honestly, this movie it makes me rethink like bad this is like the new benchmark for me for bad movies. Like
I think so.
I've rarely been so miserable watching a movie because I was so bored while at the same time so angered by the incompetence on every level.
Yeah.
With all these resources, you know, and that was always part of my issue with like something like Revenge of the Fallen or really all of Michael Bay's movies. Just like he has tremendous resources and this is what he chooses to do with it. But so let me ask you this as a guy who was once a fan of M. Night Shyamalan. Obviously, sure. Obviously he's lost it. And
yeah, yeah.
And there's no indication that he's ever getting it back, ever.
No.
How does anyone ever...
I don't know how you can make the case that he is or might. So, yeah,
but,
I don't know.
But does seeing a movie like this cause you to reevaluate any of his earlier work?
I mean, No, it doesn't. I liked those things for what they were. And I mean, even if you want to look back and say like everything that's happened, you know, post Signs for me, is when it started to turn. I mean, I still think you look back and say, I mean, he rattled off three really good movies that I like. And then there's any number of factors that could have entered in. I don't know, for as big as a fan as I am of him, I don't know much about him as a guy. I don't know if he like let it all go to his head or it's like a George Lucas situation where he's surrounding himself with people who don't say no to him.
You have to read this book called The Man Who Heard Voices.
You mentioned that last when we were talking about Signs. That was around like the Lady in the Water time,
it's
right?
It's about the making of Lady in the Water.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that would, and I still, and you told me to read it then, and I still didn't, which says a lot about our friendship and our working relationship. No. I still haven't, and maybe I should. But I mean, to answer your question, no, I mean, listen, I really like Sixth Sense. I watched it this past Halloween. I still like it. I still love Unbreakable. I love Signs more than most, even. And I rewatch Signs still. I've rewatched it twice since we talked about it on the podcast.
No,
it's great.
Wow.
I just love it. And I still love it. And even when I saw this, I mean, I don't know. That's just always been my, I'm like that with like, with in any art form. I'm like that with bands who go on to make shitty music that I, you know, that I used to like. I still like the things for, you know, what they were at the time and what they meant for me. Authors and
I definitely think it's possible to distinguish between the two, to say like, well, the guy who made Unbreakable doesn't seem to be the guy who made The Happening and The Last Airbender. But I do think, you know, there are some instances, and this isn't as fair an example because we're only talking about two movies, but I saw the movie Precious back when it was playing. And I thought, I mean, there were things that I liked about it, but there was something I picked up about it that I was like, interesting. So I went back and watched Lee Daniels' first movie, which is a movie called Shadow Boxer, which everyone owes it to themselves to seek out Shadow Boxer. If you want to talk about a movie that's bad in the way that like The Happening is bad, this is the most insane bad movie you've ever seen. And it forced me to reevaluate so much of Precious because I realized that so much of what was bad in Shadow Boxer is actually present in Precious. And
I'm confused. Which one came first?
Shadow Boxer came first.
Oh, okay. All right.
So when I went back and watched one of his earlier movies, I was like, oh, this forces me to reevaluate this second movie because I'm realizing there's a lot of things these movies have in common, but you thought it was something else in Precious. You thought it was like a stylistic choice, but it's not. That's Lee Daniels. And so I think there are some instances where even Richard Kelly, I mean, I'm a fan of Southland Tales, but to see his later work, I think forces you to go back and reevaluate Donnie Darko and say, like, maybe this guy didn't quite have a handle on what he was doing. Maybe it was a fluke, or maybe there are things in this movie that don't work as well as I sort of thought that they did.
Mm-hmm. That's at least in the Lee Daniels case. I mean, it's interesting that you mentioned that, and I only saw Precious one time, and I have not seen Shadow Boxer.
Oh, you have to see Shadow
Boxer.
Okay,
well then upon your glowing recommendation, I'll see it.
I think it's on Netflix Instant. You have to see it.
But you're talking about a guy who made a movie that really sucked, and then made a movie that was better, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a little different than getting worse. Right. I mean, that's the natural progression of things. You start out and you're not as good and you get better. And he hasn't, you know. Now, it's odder to, and I guess, you know, I mean, actually, we could probably point to a lot of precedents.
Almost every director has gotten worse. I'm serious.
Yeah,
almost,
actually, maybe you're right. Yeah.
Almost, you just can't sustain a career. But M. Night Shyamalan has...
It depends on where you start. I mean, if you make a really great first movie, then you go down, right?
Right, but I mean, even you know, somebody like, I mean, Scorsese still has a pretty high level of quality, and Spielberg is a little more variable, but still has a decent level of quality. But you know.
I mean, his next movie was Duel. I mean, there's so much to build on in Duel, right?
Right, but his next movie was Jaws. Like,
yeah.
I'm sorry, it wasn't. It was that other one with Goldie Hawn. Sugarland Express, but like Jaws was very, very early. I'm just saying. And so he really had only down to go from there. But he maintained for a while. But I mean, almost any film, you know, if you look at the list of like the filmmakers who were big in the 70s,
Who did you mention before Spielberg? I cut you off.
Scorsese.
Okay.
But like, if you look at William Friedkin and Peter Bogdanovich, and like just this list of the guys who were at top of their game in the 70s, you can't believe where their careers have gone. The thing about M. Night Shyamalan, obviously, is that it was within the span of like a decade, and the turn is so drastic. I mean, to get from The Sixth Sense to The Last Airbender in essentially the span of 10 years, it was 11 years, but... I mean, if you show
To turn the question back on you, it sounds like the answer to your own question is yes.
Not necessarily, because like you, I feel like I could sit down and watch those movies and divorce them from what
they really are. Pretty rewatchable, in my opinion. Those first three.
And divorce them from who he's become, but at the same time, knowing that he has this insane, incompetent hack within him, I wonder if I were to sit down and watch Signs again, if the hack would start to show. And many people would have said, you know, the hack was already totally starting to show.
Yeah, sure. Well, Signs may even be a bad example, because I love that movie and it has flaws.
But there's a ton of hacky stuff in it. I mean,
yeah. But I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to go political on you here, but is hackiness nature or nurture? Is it something that you just are you a hack, or are you made one by the time you spend in the business or something? I don't know, but I don't know. To circle back, I mean, I just that first, you know, the good trilogy, as I think of it in my mind, and I mentioned this on the Science Podcast, but I mean, and even The Village has things that I like, there's a lot of stuff going wrong there. That's the first point when I, as a viewer and fan, was like, again, it seems sort of progressive. I don't know. Like, I mean, and that's
The thing about The Village was like, there was a lot to not like in that movie, but there were still indications of the guy that he had been. And it would have been easy to just view that movie as a misstep.
That's why it speaks to me. Yeah, go ahead.
Had he course corrected in the next movie, but then the next movie is Lady in the Water, and it's like, oh, Jesus, no, wait, you've gone the wrong way.
You've gone the wrong way.
And then it just gets worse from there.
Yeah. Well, this is weird. Like, we're saying different things, but I actually feel like you're still bolstering my point, because...
No, I am. I don't know that the badness of Last Airbender would cause me to think less of those first movies. It was just a question, because I think there are instances where that applies. And I don't know that it does here, honestly. But I do think the Signs example
is an important question to examine, though. You're right. Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
If you could bend any element, what would it be?
Whatever the element would be that would allow me to have not seen The Last Airbender.
The answer is pizza.
Oh, wow. All
right. I would love to bend some pizza. I don't know. You know what? Stepping back from all this, again, while I would never say that anybody should watch this, I will never recommend this.
No.
I feel like we've had a good discussion.
Yeah, I hope it was everything that John had hoped for.
Because... I especially await John's feedback on the Facebook or whatever medium he chooses to communicate his feedback to. But yeah, I mean, this is And again, I'm sort of an optimistic person by nature, and I, of course, had read so many bad things about, you know, how bad this was, and I had dismissed them as hyperbole, much like yourself. But no, I mean, they're all correct. I mean, they're all right. It's so bad.
I had no interest in seeing it when it came out, and then the bad reviews only sort of cemented that. But yeah, I mean, I sat down to watch it, like, again, not interested in seeing it and knowing it was bad, so kind of dreading it. But I mean, you give everything a chance, but I mean, the movie lost me in the first 20 seconds when it was just the shots of the guys doing the acrobatics. It was
and then the reading of the scrolling text.
It was very obvious that, like, oh, he doesn't know what he's doing. Okay, great. Only an hour and 40 minutes left of this. Anyway, so if you guys have a movie that you want to hear us talk about, hopefully we'll be nicer to it than The Last Airbender.
Or maybe not, if that's what you're into, because it sounded like John kind of wanted us to do this, and I hope we've lived up to his expectations.
Yeah, well, I mean, we certainly have the same opinion of the movie as him. But anyway, you can always email suggestions to us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com, or, like John did, post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/fthismovie, where there's always lively discussion going on. Thank you, Alex, for going through this with me. I feel like we fought a war together.
I feel like we have. I feel like we're better friends. I feel like we're better, movie commenters and all this shit.
Yeah.
Which is weird. Maybe in some weird abstract way, we owe a debt of gratitude to The Last Airbender, but maybe not. I don't know.
F that movie.
See you later.
Bye.